válido de lunes a jueves. You
the Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Larry, fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
Isn't it fun to hear people screaming your name? Of course it is. If you listen to this show with any regularity, you know I'm a word freak. The word for this episode might be nostalgia. Definitions from Webster or Oxford, they're okay. But maybe the best ever was in the TV show Mad Men. There was a scene where Don Draper is making a pitch for a new product from Kodak, a slide projector. Kodak calls it a photo wheel, but Draper has a better name in mind. He and the potential clients sit around the conference table and lower the lights as Draper begins his pitch. As he speaks, he clicks through images of his own family, which is, unbeknownst to them, falling apart as his marriage implodes. Pictures of him playing with his young children, kissing their mother, and so on.
In Greek, nostalgia literally means the pain from an old wound. It's a twinge in your heart, far more powerful than memory alone. This device, it's a time machine. It goes backwards, forwards. Takes us to a place where we ache to go again. It's not called the wheel. It's called the carousel. It lets us travel the way a child travels. Round and around. Back home again. To a place where we know we are loved.
Nostalgia is powerful stuff. I had quite a helping of it myself just a few days ago. What triggered that? It's prom season, and my younger daughter just attended hers. It was fun for her, but I gotta say, Kind of put a lump in my throat. I hate cliches like rite of passage, such pretentious crap, but I suppose there's no denying it. My baby girl is really growing up. As much as I bitch about the direction of our culture in 2023, it's not all negative. The way kids view proms today are a lot different. Dates are not mandatory. Some kids go solo, or they go with dates, or maybe just a group of friends. They view it as just another party, one where they get dressed up. Seems they've hammered proms into low-pressure affairs, which is what they always should have been. My daughter had a date. Nice kid, I liked him. But it wasn't a big deal. Just kind of casual and loose. Before the prom, everyone, hundreds of kids and parents and siblings, rendezvoused at a beautiful park near the school. A million pictures were taken. I bumped into a friend of mine. Our daughters have been friends since first grade. I think his head was kind of in the same place as mine. I mentioned that all the girls looked like women, and all the boys looked like boys. I was surprised at the glamour quotient. Every girl was ready for the red carpet on Oscar night. Most dudes were in tuxedos. That was really heartening. No jeans, no tracksuits, no hooker tube dresses. All classy. One girl had a killer dress but wore kids' high tops. It was cute but may have been practical as well, because even in sneakers she was taller than her date. Probably didn't want to accentuate the height difference. Nice girl. Of course, seeing my daughter and her friends all glammed up made me recall my own high school prom. Back then, There was tremendous pressure. No one attended without a date. And there was this idiotic notion that the person who accompanied you to the prom was, what? Not just some chick or guy that you took to a party. It was a serious romantic relationship, which for 18-year-old kids is usually uncommon and unwise. In many episodes, I've mentioned the two pals that helped me endure the insanity that was my high school. Our adventures together were epic. We committed misdemeanors and felonies, and those were usually before lunch. We were never delinquents, though. Delinquents got caught. We didn't. My buddy Jimmy had a steady girlfriend from sophomore year on. In fact, they eventually married. Frank moved from one girl to another. As soon as things became serious, he'd find another, or more accurately, they'd find him. Frank looked like some teen idol. Girls swarmed him, and he wasn't real particular about who. You had to wear a tux, which meant renting a tux. They were outrageously priced in hideous styles made of petrochemicals and probably only cleaned after every 5 or 6 rentals, if ever. You had to rent a limo, also hideously expensive. So we divide the cost with several friends. There was a photographer who would immortalize you and your date in laminated wallet size 4x6, 5x7, and 8x10 color glossies, also at hideous expense. Then there was the prom itself. Some schools had them in a gym, but ours was in some wedding factory catering joint. Chicken cordon bleu or prime rib. Also, a terrible ripoff. Then it was back into the limo to head to Manhattan and pretend you were, I don't know, Hugh Hefner or Don Draper. Dangerfields, which was Rodney's comedy club on the East Side. Wednesdays, a disco slash restaurant. Never a good combination. But Jimmy and Frank and I, we were too cool for that shit. Hey, wait a minute. I'm getting ahead of myself. Who was my date? Well, at first I didn't have one. And there were no likely candidates. The school we attended was devoid of females, boys only. So meeting girls was not easy. In Jimmy's neighborhood, there were 3 sisters. They were a local legend. They were each a couple of years apart. Everyone knew them because all 3 were gorgeous, stunning. The youngest, Ashley, was ash blonde. 15 or 16 years old, your classic perky cheerleader look. Blue eyes, peaches and cream complexion, very personable, cute as hell. The eldest sister, Lois, was about 20. Much more my type. Cool, calm, smoldering. A cascade of light brown hair, hazel eyes, and a demeanor that was a bit aloof. She was a stretch, a challenge. She was too old for me. She had a serious boyfriend. But when I'd see her around the neighborhood, I was smitten. The middle sister was Virginia. She had powerful visual impact. 5'10", platinum blonde hair, neon blue eyes, a mouthful of perfect fluorescent teeth. She was the kind of girl who would turn heads from 200 yards away. She was the only sister I'd never met. Time was ticking for the prom. Jimmy and Frank were all set, and I was all alone. Jimmy suggested I ask Virginia. She was gorgeous, and as far as he knew, she had no boyfriend. We were cruising around the neighborhood in his Catalina when he pointed to the schoolyard and said, "There she is, just waiting for a charm bomb like you." She was on the basketball court, all alone, shooting hoops. And she was good. Sinking hook shots and layups, she made it look easy. She wore jeans, high tops, and a t-shirt. I swallowed hard. I opened the car door, walked to the chain-link fence, hooked my fingers in it. She saw me, but just kept throwing that Spalding at the hoop. I called her name. She turned and looked. She seemed perplexed. She didn't know me from Adam. Jimmy was a great friend and wingman. Suddenly, he appeared at my side. She did know him and said hi. Now, I wasn't such a UFO. I introduced myself and said I admired her hookshot. She said thanks. I asked her what she was doing a week from tonight. She shrugged. I said, Want to go to the prom with me? She said, okay. I told her I'd pick her up at her house in a week at 7 with a limo. That was it. I rented my tuxedo, powder blue. I bought prom tickets, kicked in my share for the limo, and the big night arrived. It was a beautiful evening. Jimmy and Frank swung by my house. Their girlfriends were with them, all done up in slinky gowns and heels. Virginia's house was the last stop. I rang the doorbell, met the parents. Her dad was a doctor. She introduced him as Dr. So-and-so. That struck me as a little odd. Back in the limo, off to the catering joint. I don't remember too much about that part because I probably memory-holed it. I was a live wire with a reputation for some comedic chops. I did impressions of almost every teacher, and they were frequently requested by my classmates. When the band took a break, Jimmy and Frank and some others demanded I take the stage and do some shtick. I was unprepared, but I figured I'd wing it. I did a few impressions that got some laughs, but was soon out of material. Instead of leaving on a laugh, I stayed up there too long and exited the stage in silence. What a shitty feeling. But what a great lesson. I'd never been a Boy Scout, but they were definitely onto something with that be prepared stuff. If Virginia was neutral about me, I was pretty sure my bombing on that stage likely pushed her into the dislike zone. She certainly seemed kind of chilly when I took my seat next to her. Since we were too cool for the joints that catered to the prom kiddies, we had a reservation at the Plaza Hotel. No, not for an orgy. We had a table at their nightclub featuring a chanteuse named January Jones. No, not the actress that played Don Draper's wife. The place was fantastic, like something out of a James Bond movie. The band was more of a Sinatra-style orchestra, and January could really put a song across in her smoky Peggy Lee style. Of course, we were the youngest people in that joint. Everyone was at least twice our age, except for the waitress and January. They were maybe 30, but they seemed pretty old to us. Once her show was over, it was time to move on. When we left the hotel, our limo was waiting curbside. It had rained. The pavement was slick and produced fantastic reflections of white headlights, red taillights, and the facade of the hotel. A full moon was cracking through the clouds. There were horse-drawn carriages lining the curb, with guys dressed for Victorian London. That was a big New York prom night tradition. Take a ride on one of those through Central Park. Make out with your girlfriend as the horse clip-clops along. The Plaza is definitely the most glamorous hotel in New York, partly because of its location at the southeast corner of Central Park. In front is the magnificent Grand Army Fountain. Across Fifth Avenue was a skyscraper, which, for a long time, was the General Motors building. The expanse of ground level doubled as a showroom. And considering its location, GM was smart enough to never waste that precious space on compact Chevys or family wagons. It was always Cadillacs, maybe a Buick Electra or an Olds 98. That floor was the stuff of dreams, which also featured Don Draper buying his Coupe de Ville right there, which was Hollywood-bending history. Those cars were really just for show. You could look and sit and touch, but the location was not a dealership. You had to visit a dealer to buy one. The Plaza and its immediate vicinity captured the very best that New York ever offered. The magic was palpable. Before we piled into the limousine, I stood there drinking it all in. I don't think any of my friends were having similar thoughts. They seemed eager to get along to the next location. The GM building, which represented the company that fueled more 20th century American dreams than any other, well, that place has long since been vacated by General Motors. It's now occupied by Apple, which erected some stupid retail glass box in front of the once majestic showroom. It looks like a greenhouse. How ironic and telling for our nation in this twisted century. Untold numbers of guys stood in that showroom, as Don Draper did, myself included, gazing at the magnificence of a sleek new Cadillac. The self-proclaimed but not undeserved standard of excellence. What fantasies played in their minds as they slipped behind the wheel, huh? One can only guess, but I'd wager they were not very dissimilar from mine. Cars represented freedom and a conveyance to adventure. A day at the beach, a ride through the woods, are my favorite. A sunset cruise through the desert. A beautiful woman beside you? Well, of course. Cadillac added an additional kick to driving that few other cars could. The feeling that before you had even begun the journey, you had arrived. I enjoyed that Cadillac mystique for a while myself until the damn thing almost killed me. You can discover that story in episode 304, Car Crazy. That's in the April 2021 tab at thatlarryshow.com. Now on that same spot of New York real estate, what fantasies occupy the psyches of dudes gazing at the latest iPhone or tablet or laptop? Do they dream of faster clock speeds and snappier spreadsheets? More vivid images as they serve porn? Detroit's sales continue to decline as younger consumers lust after hot rod phones instead of hot rods. And the automotive pitches have shifted from sex, luxury, and horsepower to virtue signaling. Maybe the most nauseating website is Subaru's. A click on the words,
"Our commitment,"
on their homepage reveals a drop-down menu with links to several treacly phrases, including
the Subaru love promise.
What is that? A hand job on the New Jersey Turnpike? Let's see. Ooh, the headline. Ready for this? This is the kind of slogan that makes an ad man drool.
Love means being more than a car company.
Wow. Who thought of that? And Subaru thinks it's so special, they have a little circle R, so it's a registered trademark slogan. Everywhere are pictures of smiling people and blue Subaru t-shirts with their hands making the heart symbol. Subaru's love promise is divided into several love categories. Can you guess what's first?
Love the earth.
Of course. That one's so important, it rates a personal message from Subaru CEO Tom Dahl. Yes, that's his name.
At Subaru, we feel it's our personal responsibility to protect Earth's natural wonders and encourage our retailers and customers to engage in smart environmental practices simply because it's the right thing to do.
Well, isn't he a doll? What a nice sentiment. But, Tom, you do manufacture automobiles, and no matter how you try to greenwash that endeavor, you're not growing potatoes. No matter how you claim to responsibly source all the parts, they're still polluting the shit out of Mother Earth. Every manufactured car will burn through dozens of tires, oil changes, multiple brake pads, not to mention thousands of gallons of gasoline. That's pollution. It's unavoidable. So stop the bullshit. The next love category is
Subaru loves to care. We should all have a chance to lead a healthy life, and we're aiming to give as many people that chance as we can.
How do they do that? Do you get a year's gym membership with a purchase? Maybe a personal dietitian? No. But when you click the care box, it lists all the charities to which Subaru contributes. But in point of fact, aren't they all charities to which Subaru customers contribute? If Subaru chooses to break off a portion of profits and give to charities, well, that's nice and that's their choice. But the source of that money is Subaru buyers, not the Subaru Corporation. There are more love categories like
Subaru loves pets.
Well, who doesn't? But how many dogs, cats, deer, raccoons, possums, armadillos, skunks are flattened by Subarus every day? A fuck ton. So if they really cared about animals, they'd make a product that doesn't kill animals. Like potatoes. Lastly, Subaru bolts an extra letter to the abbreviation that is the backbone of the woke movement. Yeah, after diversity, equity, and inclusion, Subaru adds the word belonging. Isn't that redundant? Inclusion seems pretty similar to belonging, no? Of course, it's all bullshit. Another opportunity to virtue signal so they can trumpet their support for all kinds of groups about which they care so deeply. What would happen if, say, some guy from the assembly line, in his greasy coveralls and steel-toed boots, found his way up to the top floor where the execs have their fancy corner offices, private toilets, and so on? How long could that blue-collar worker hang around there before somebody would say, "Excuse me, what are you doing here?" Or more likely that somebody would quietly dial security to have him escorted out. And what if the assembly line worker said, "But I feel like I belong here. I want to be the B in DEIB. That's when they'd put him in an arm lock and tell him to come along quietly. Subaru sells cars. All cars kill people, especially when driven by drunken or texting or psychotic assholes. Cars fuck up the planet, always will, whether powered by gas, diesel, electric, steam, or hydrogen. And I love cars. But that's the truth. Cars are not eco-friendly. But it seems nothing these days is except most plant life. Farting cattle, breathing humans, and all those other invasive species, huh? Kudzu and Spanish moss and gypsy moths and tent worms and killer bees, and on it goes. No matter how you slice it, Earth is doomed. According to many assholes, anyway, the same assholes who said mRNA vaxes were 100% safe and effective.
Larry, stay on task.
Ah, okay. It was just a brief detour, but it had to be said. Back to the prom. Way back. There were other idiotic prom traditions in New York. One was to take a ride on the Staten Island Ferry. Why people do this, I've no idea. In case you are envisioning that ferry as some romantic vessel, it's not. It's a big, fat, dirty, rusty ship with ass-punishing seats and concrete floors. Basically, a subway car that floats. It had plenty of grime, graffiti, and smelled of piss. So the limo took us downtown and we boarded the boat. Jimmy and Frank disappeared somewhere to make out with their girlfriends, which left Virginia and me on deck in stilted conversation. She was a stunning girl, a nice girl, but for whatever reason, we just did not click. I was eager for the boat to flip a U-turn so I could go home and sleep. I think she was too. The views of the Manhattan skyline were impressive. Kind of took the awkwardness off the silences. The skipper was in the wheelhouse above us. It had its own little deck with a bulkhead and scuppers. A speedboat ripped by it and produced a big wake. When it reached the ferry, the ship rolled and suddenly a flume of water gushed from that upper deck scupper directly onto Virginia's head. She was drenched. It was almost like that scene from Carrie, but at least it wasn't a bucket of guts. There was a toilet on the boat, and I went to look for paper towels, forgetting that this was New York. Of course, the dispensers were empty. I gave her my tuxedo jacket to wear. I have no recollection of the limo ride home. Once Virginia and I were dropped off at our houses, Jimmy and Frank and their dates continued on to Jones Beach to watch the sunrise, another nutty tradition. I've always been into sunsets. Sunrises, not so much. Unless I'm fishing. My daughter tells me she enjoyed her prom. What she did not enjoy was the East German-style security measures. Lengthy pat-downs looking for what? Confiscation of lipsticks or candy, why? But this is where we are in 2023. Everyone is criminalized. Everyone must be searched. I wonder, will there still be proms when my daughter's kids are in high school? If so, will our culture further degenerate? Or will some cataclysm provide the big reset we really need? For decades and decades, there were no searches of kids going to proms or school or passengers boarding airplanes or sports fans attending ball games. But there always have been drugs and weapons. What changed? It's simple. Marxist filth. As their infestation increased, America's quality of life has plunged. How to stop them? Might be too late. Which is why millions are fleeing commie shithole cities, myself included. The national divorce is undeclared, but clearly underway. Already, Marxist shithole cities are imploding. Massive businesses are fleeing, same as individuals. Nordstrom and Walmart have abandoned San Francisco. The city is doomed, and they brought it on themselves, so fuck San Francisco. LA's in a similar way. Chicago, New York, Portland, Seattle, all commie-operated, all unlivable shitholes. Things are going to get interesting. How interesting? Al Jolson said it best.
You ain't heard nothing yet.
Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Stop by That Larry Show for more content and commentary. There you will find hundreds more episodes. If you like what you just heard, leave a strong 5-star review wherever you download. If you really like what you heard, why not help support the show? Just click the Patreon or PayPal button and make a pledge. If you prefer conventional methods, you'll see a P.O. Box address that accepts donations as well. Write to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. I get quite a bit of email, so I don't always answer right away, but I do always answer. Follow the show between episodes on Twitter and Facebook. We have a lot of fun there. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts. And until that time, take no shit.